State Rep Sarah Leitner.
Hey there, Greg. Thanks for having me.
And are you here?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, perfect.
Miracles never cease. High-tech world we live in.
Fancy Friday morning.
How are you?
So I'm just living the dream, just out, you know, super excited for Tuesday to get here. It's been, you know, an interesting year, like we've talked about before. We're continuing to reach out to people to get out and vote. And those of you who haven't returned your absent voter, ballot, you can just take that to the clerk's office, your local clerk, and vote in person still. They have extra sample ballots or extra ballots in case, you know, you didn't fully fill it out or you changed your mind. So, you know, we're hoping lots of people tick it off for Leitner, so for the 65th.
So what? Don't put it in the mail.
Don't put it in the mail at this point. I mean, you know, just the nature of how mail goes. You know, there's a few days out, and especially you want to make sure that your voice and your vote is counted. And at this point, you know, it's a little late to get your ballot in the mail. So, like I said, take it in person. You can still vote in person, or you can just take your completed ballot and give it to the clerk as well.
Sarah, talk about your district and what the concerns are.
So, a lot of concerns right now are in regards to, you know, COVID. You know, we've had some changes recently, you know, and in light of the Supreme Court case, you know, the governor has basically used any means of extra power that she can to regulate what's going on in our life. I think, you know, I've heard from numerous people in the last day about the new order that just came down from DHHS regarding you know, restaurants and bars and even service places collecting information, name, address, phone number, stuff like that for contact tracing, and then lowering capacity limits again. And, you know, I get it. We have to take into account COVID's very serious. It's very real. But, you know, I think that people can be smart. Businesses can be smart. Let them continue to make their own choices on what type of PPE they're requiring and who they're going to service and manage. I mean, you know, going down to the group of six is very difficult, especially in larger families like mine. You know, we have blended households, and six is, you know, very difficult to abide by. But I think you still can be smart as a person and, you know, just take precautions and be careful, you know. I know people are sick of hearing this, but, you know, don't share, you know, drinks, wash your hands, you know, when you're up and about. Obviously, you know, there are some requirements. Some people are asking about the masks. Now, I just, you know, I think that with the increase in COVID cases right now, with the mask mandate in place, I think it goes to show you that that's not 100%, you know, effective in preventing the spread of COVID.
Yeah, but so, there's not a mandate, is there?
Well, it's not necessarily a mandate. It's a very, very strong recommendation.
Well, right.
But I will tell you that, you know, you go to places and some places say wear a mask, it's a law. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think it's deceiving because the legislature is the one that legislates the laws and that makes the laws. And right now it's a pandemic order under HHS, a requirement or a recommendation to wear a mask in public spaces. And I think they need to continue to leave that up to the businesses. And it does kind of drive me a little crazy when it says it's the law because, you know, it's supposed to be given the weight of law, but it's not law. Know what I mean? But, you know, we're trying to mitigate spread. But obviously it's still happening, even with a mask. I'm going to say mask mandate in place. But that one of the biggest things right now is, you know, the masks in the schools as well. I hear from people every day still regarding that as well. And, you know, my kids are in school, and I know that we've had some situations in Jackson, Michigan Center, Parma Western, in regards to a COVID case. But you have to also remember that an outbreak is considered two or more. And cases. So it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, when we hear outbreak, we think of like mass numbers. And that's not what it is. Outbreak is two or more. And so we need to bring that back in and disclose the data to people and let them know what the actual numbers are. And that's been one of the things that we have been pushing for in regards to governor's recommendations and orders, is show us the data, you know, because percentages are also deceiving. You know, for instance, Eaton Rapids only has so many hospital beds. Well, they might normally only have, you know, one room full, and all of a sudden they have four. Well, you know, you do that on a percentage basis, and yeah, it looks like it's super duper high. But if you look at the actual number, it's not really. Now, you take Henry Ford Allegiance Health, they have capacity for a lot more beds. And, you know, I think there were like 79 people. That wasn't Henry Ford. It might have been Ingham. Anyways, you know, you take the bed capacity numbers. You need to know the actual capacity numbers and not necessarily just percentages, because those percentages can be deceiving, like I said. And so when we're making some of these decisions about what's going on in our state and how we're functioning and how we're running business and running the economy, you know, you need to take into account, yep, I get positivity rate, you know, but I think the bigger issue is how many people are actually going into the hospital and getting really sick. And more weight needs to be given on that and not just the testing numbers. Obviously, we are testing more. You know, we know this all the time. I mean, you can't go by Frandor and not see a line for people trying to get tested for COVID and or the antibodies. So, you know, there is that. But I think that we need to allow a lot of times, you know, the locals to determine their area, because, you know, they know what's going on with their health directors, their hospitals, things like that. And we just need to make sure we try to open Michigan again, and, you know, get our economy up and running. I mean, we're still at half capacity, I think.
We did have the worst day ever in Michigan yesterday.
Mm-hmm. For cases,
and I know deaths was over 40, but there were 1,000 people that died yesterday in the United States. So we don't. Mm-hmm. We certainly don't have a handle on it.
Well, yeah, and like, you know, like they said, we would have a spike. We know that a spike would happen. And that happens when you open everything back up and you're exposing them. We know that that's going to happen. They said that in the beginning, you know. But that's why I said I think you need to allow the locals the freedoms to determine their plan. And the reason is because, like, for instance, it gives them incentive to do better with PPE or be strict with, you know, safety guidelines, social distancing, things of that nature. That way they stay below that threshold. And then, you know, that was part of the plan that we have actually just recently introduced, was, you know, having state standards. And when we looked at metrics, we looked at metrics in multiple states and then said, okay, what if Michigan falls here and, say, Jackson County falls below this rate? Well, they could ease up some of the restrictions. And as long as they stayed within that threshold, then they can continue to do business and, you know, function as normally as they can during a pandemic. But if they go above that, then they get slapped with, you know, the state restrictions again. But yeah, I think by giving the locals the control, it incentivizes your area to do to practice safe practices and good hygiene and all that stuff, social distancing. So
tough call, isn't it?
It really is. And, you know, it's novel. Obviously, we know that this is a novel issue, novel virus. It's new. We don't know. There's things we don't know. We don't know how long antibodies last. You know, there's all that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just all the craziness that come with it, you know, budgeting even. And we worked really hard this last year in, you know, balancing the budget still in the wake of COVID and not doing it on the back of the taxpayers. You know, as far as increasing taxes, we were able to, you know, use some federal funds. Obviously, we cut some things. The other thing is we still made education our focus. And in fact, even in the wake of COVID, we still funded education above and beyond the prior year. So I count that as a win. And one of the other cool things, you know, is also during this pandemic, you know, before the pandemic hit, I was looking at the procurement processes and how we do contracts. And, you know, I'm happy to say that the governor signed my procurement bill, which allows for more transparency in our government in purchasing and contracts.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good, too. So, you know, in the wake, there's lots of things that we're cognizant of. We're cognizant of our infrastructure still. And moving into the next year on approach, you know, focusing on education and infrastructure. And those are big things. And, you know, just recently we passed the broadband bill that allows for grants for rural areas to help, you know, with their broadband issues. And obviously that's been a huge deal in our district.
Yeah.
You know, I have rural Jackson County. I have Springport. I have Tompkins, which sits in a bowl. And so, you know, this is something that's really needed that is still a priority. We were able to get some money, some grant stuff going for that. So I'm looking forward to continuing that and seeing what else we can do to help navigate this time.
How painful does the budget look for next year? I'm sure you guys have looked out that far.
Yeah, so, you know, we have. And quite frankly, we're going to feel the weight of the COVID pandemic for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking at this point, a little over $1 billion again. That is going to be short, you know, probably, I think we were in the, it's over $1 billion. So at this point,
that's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money. So, you know, this is the time where we have to tighten our belt, and make government accountable, and to the people that we serve. And actually, you know, go through and prioritize some of these things. Like, are these really needed? Did these really benefit all the people of Michigan? Or does this, you know, thing or program benefit the people of the 65th or, you know, Jackson, Eaton or Lenawee counties, you know, stuff like that. So we're going to have to be really cognizant of the dollars and, you know, we're going to have to make some tough choices. But I'm confident in the process, the committee process. I'm confident in the people that will be there. I just hope that, you know, the 65th chooses Sarah Leitner to continue to be their voice in Lansing. Because, you know, by having the unilateral power that the governor's had with her and her director, she has taken the people's voice out of government. And I just think that we need to do better. And we all deserve better. And we all need our voices heard. And so I want to continue to do that for the people of the 65th. So they can contact me, you know, on my email. It's www.electsarahleitner.com on my website right now. So they can do that, cell phone, Facebook. Just reach out. And, you know, on mm-hmm. Tuesday, just mark Leitner for state representative. And I would be humbled and privileged and honored to continue to serve everyone in the 65th.
Final message from Sarah Leitner. Thanks, Sarah. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Greg. Have a great day.
Yeah, take care.
All right.
Good luck Tuesday. Sarah Leitner, state rep.